Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Bewitching Book Tours Blog Talk Radio. I am GL Ross, your host, and today's exciting guest is author Catherine Hurst. Hello, Catherine. How are you?
I'm great. How are you today?
I am doing very well. The sun is finally out here in Texas, and that makes me happy. We've had cold, cloudy, chilly, and I'm just not about that. But now you're in sunny Florida, so tell us about Florida.
Right. I live just north of Orlando, and today is about 75 degrees and sunny with a nice little breeze.
Oh,
yeah,
my.
It was wonderful. We actually turned the heater on for the first time this morning for about 10 minutes just to get the snow out of the house.
Wow.
So the windows are open, and it's wonderful.
Oh, that to me would be heaven on earth, because you guys, I mean, you pretty much stay nice temperatures all year round, true?
No.
No?
We have this wonderful thing called summer that starts somewhere in mid-April and finishes up in mid-October, and in the middle of that it is miserable, humid, and hot. So I love winters here, but the summers, if I could, I would go north.
I gotcha. Yeah, I can see that, because I would definitely think I would love the winters there, but I didn't even think about how hot and humid it does become in the summers. Well, tell us about, like, what you like to do in Florida. Do you have hobbies or sporting things you like to do with your family or friends? How do you spend your spare time when you're not trying to knock out the next book?
I actually like to do stained glass. It's one of those hobbies that forces me to slow down and focus, because if you don't, you'll burn yourself or cut yourself or something will explode. So it's nice to have something that, you know, occupies the brain and the hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I usually run 100 miles an hour from the time I get up till the time I go to bed. So that's one of the reasons that, you know, I enjoy it.
Well, now, I remember reading on your author bio that you have rescue pups. So do your doggies keep you busy too?
Oh, man. Yeah, we have three. We have a chocolate lab that is, I think she's a little touched. And then a small black lab mix, but I don't know what, and a small, 50-pound pit. And yeah, they're all named after songs. So I have Jolene, Roxanne, and Jagger.
And oh, I love that.
They like it when we sing to them. So they have their own theme songs, and yes, and they're crazy and barky and, you know, always into something, especially the lab. She is just our consummate troublemaker.
Well, now you say we. Do you have a husband, significant other?
I do. I have a husband and three kids, and one child remaining at home, 13-year-old, and the other two are out in the world.
Wow, that's great. Now, I laughed when I read that you are a self-proclaimed nerd raising a nerdling. Okay, you have to explain that comment.
Okay. Well, the nerdling, my husband, I think I'm going to give the most credit for that. He is a role player. He's played Dungeons and Dragons his entire life. he's got my son playing Dungeons and Dragons. It's all about Marvel comic books and Xbox and Doctor Who and all of those, you know, when you think of nerdy activities, that's what they do. For me, it's more... I'm a textbook nerd. I like to read textbooks. I'm a weirdo. I homeschool my youngest kid, so I'm always looking for cool stuff for him, and 9 times out of 10, I'm the one falling down the rabbit hole when I start doing research. You know, I'm, mm-hmm. you know, starting to think, okay, what do they call the entrance to the Vatican? And then before I know it, I'm doing walking tours and, you know, watching alien documentaries on, you know.
Yes.
You know, and 6 hours go by, and I'm like, what was I looking at? So for me, that's it. It's the, you know, I try to add enough realism, especially the psychological aspects to my characters,
sure.
To make them feel human, even though they generally are not.
Well, I noticed that when I was reading, you have a passion for shoes and vintage clothing, which I too,
yes.
I'm with you there. But antique British cars, how did you get into antique British cars?
I just love little sports cars. And honestly, the only ones I could afford were the old British, you know, the little MGs or the Spitfires.
Mm-hmm.
And, they're just fun. They're like driving a Matchbox car down the road, which can be terrifying, but that adds to the fun.
I love that.
If I were more motivated, I would actually learn how to fix them. But, you know, there are people who do that are far more intelligent with mechanical things than I am. So.
Well, then you love to people watch, and I'm sure people watching
mm-hmm.
helps you develop your characters. Where are some of the places you like to go people watch?
Hands down, the best place to people watch in Florida or in Central Florida is Lake Eola, which is kind of a park with a large lake in the middle of downtown Orlando. And you have, depending on the time of day, anything from people who live there, our homeless population in Central Florida is really large, to the corporate, you know, business types that are walking off their lunch hour. And then in the evenings after school, there's families. So
then you
just
have a mix of everything.
Yep, and I like airport people watching. It's probably
yes.
one of the most emotional places to watch people,
mm-hmm.
whether they're saying hello, goodbye, or they're just stressed out trying to catch the plane. It's fascinating.
Yes, no, I'm a flight attendant, and I will admit, I love when I'm waiting for my flights to just sit and watch people because you see everything. I mean, it.
Right.
But I have to admit, with it being Veterans Day, I have to say, I think one of my favorite things is when I see the men and women coming home to meet their families, and all the flight attendants will jump off the plane and run out there because we want to see them when they see their family for the first time, and then we're all crying. But it's just such a
I'm crying
fabulous
listening
scene.
To you. Yeah, no, I'm a former military wife, and my daughter is in the Navy, so
we've
lived through those reunions.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, she's awesome. But, we've been there. You know, we've been the family sitting in the gym waiting for the plane to land and, you know,
yep.
saying goodbye on 12 hours notice and that sort
wow.
of thing. And it's tough, but, you
yes,
know.
It's not just the individual that serves. It's the whole family that serves. And I think sometimes people don't realize that.
No, it's definitely a challenge.
I can only imagine. Well, let's get into your books. I think it is so cool that you won a publishing contract with Kindle Press through the Kindle Scout Contest, and that was with your book, The Spirit Tree, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about The Spirit Tree and about the contest.
Okay. Well, I'll start with the contest. The contest is kind of like American Idol for books.
Okay.
And it's the easiest way to explain it. It's you put your book up on Kindle Scout, and you have 30 days to basically beat the bushes and beg and steal and borrow any way you can to get people to nominate the book for a contract. I learned more about marketing in that 30 days than I had in the, you know, year previous of trying to get a handle on how to get the word out about your book.
Mm-hmm.
And then once it's selected, they close the, so you upload it, you have 30 days to pimp it, and then you have 2 weeks while you're sitting. Now, the decision can come any time from a day after it closes to 14 days after.
Okay.
So that's kind of like purgatory. You've been running yourself ragged for 30 days,
right.
And everything stops. And it's like, okay, so I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and I'm waiting. And about, I think it was the ninth day, literally, it was 6 o'clock a.m. in the morning. I'm still in bed. I'm obsessed. So I grab my phone, and I'm looking, and there's a gray bar on your author Kindle Scout page. And mine was blue, which means
okay.
So I'm screaming. My husband's like, what the heck are you doing? You know, like, it's blue, blue. You know, it was like a pregnancy test or something, you know.
Right,
oh,
yeah,
I got
really.
It, I got it. So, yeah, and then it was so cool. And then very fast after that. They ship it off to a professional editor, and the book had been edited and rewritten. Originally, it was written in third person. I rewrote it to first. I mean, it had really gone through a lot of of hands by the time it got to Kindle Scout. But, the editor made some suggestions, not anything too crazy, but a week later, I turned in the final manuscript, and 2 weeks after that, it was on pre-order, and 2 weeks after that, it released. So
wow, that's great.
It is a whirlwind. And
it
came out in July, mid-July, and right now, like, it's going through its first promotion period. So for the month of November, it's 99 cents, and the sales have been just absolutely phenomenal. And it's kind of neat because, well, it's neat and it's weird because it's awesome for the that was my second release. For something, I'm a nobody right now. For it to take off the way it did. But it's, I don't know how it's happened. And I'm one of these people.
Well, it's a blessing.
Like, yeah, well, it's the nerdy thing, too. I want to know what's working for this so I can do it again.
Sure. Right.
And I don't know if I would ever put myself through another Scout campaign because it was just excruciating.
Mm-hmm. What is the Spirit Tree about?
The Spirit Tree is about a young woman who lives in Central Florida. It's set in current time, but I took the area that the book is set in back about 20 years to the way I remember Central Florida was when we still had orange groves and dirt roads. She's very country, and she's had kind of a rough start in life. She's been raised by a great aunt and great uncle, or who she thinks is her great uncle. When her uncle passes away, his spirit visits her immediately after in the hospital room and tells her, you need to get my journal to this professor at the University of Florida. And she starts, and he calls her my granddaughter. And she's like, no, I'm your niece. And through a lot of circumstances, she realizes that pretty much everything she's come to believe about herself has not been true. And she's actually a Native American equivalent to a fairy, which is a Nunahi. And it's just a little different take on that hero journey. I have a very reluctant and somewhat clumsy hero journey for her. As she figures out who she is and what she is and what she can do, and people are coming after her, and there's wolves coming after her, and there's snakes everywhere, and I really tapped into that Cherokee heritage. The book is based on my real great uncle.
Oh, okay.
I was
That's
a way
neat.
For me to honor him and my great grandmother.
Well, now that is the first book in a series, because the second book, 12 Spirits of Christmas, that just recently released, correct?
Yeah, that released on the 8th of November, and that continues Tessa's journey. She's had a couple months now to get used to the idea that, okay, I'm different. In the first book, her life really implodes. I mean, she loses her job. She loses a lot of things and what she thought she was supposed to do in life. Everything is different. Now she's kind of settling in. She's kind of at the point at the beginning of the book where this sucks. I don't like this. I want my life back. It's the day after Halloween, and she's in Walmart. She's looking for, 90% off chocolate, and she's finding Santa hats and candy canes, and she hates Christmas, and she's miserable. And, the basically rapid fire starts at her again with the phone calls, and I need you to do this, and I need, the family obligations and the men in her life are kind of driving her crazy, and she's working two jobs.
Imagine that. Men in your life driving you crazy?
Exactly.
Can't even imagine.
So she is now working for the police department, and kind of a tongue-in-cheek psychic situation where she's helping solve murders, and there's a series of murders that are based around the 12 days of Christmas, Christmas Carol. So the first one is Mr. Partridge is found hanging in an orange tree.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Now you get into the dark and gloomy, don't you?
It is, but it isn't. This series is I call it my light beachy read. There's some pretty gross, I mean, if you really look at it, it's kind of gross, but it's, I don't go into the gore aspects in this series. It's very light. It's approached from as much humor as I can.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, she's being haunted by a ghost of the Mr. Partridge, and usually when she sees spirits, they look normal like they did in life. And this guy, for some reason, shows up blue as a blueberry with Christmas lights around his neck.
Oh.
You know, with his eyes bulging like a pug, and it's like, whoa, you know. So,
right.
Just adding that kind of humor, I think, softens it a lot.
Right. Well, now, you also have an urban fantasy paranormal romance series, which is the Sinestra Day series.
Right.
Before we start talking about Feast of Mercy, let's talk about book one, which is Feast of the Epiphany, correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tell us about Feast of the Epiphany and the Sinestra Day series.
Sure. The concept for the series, and this one, while it does have humor, it is a darker, much more graphic, both in terms of violence and the steam level. Spiritually, it's a pretty clean read.
Okay.
There's a few, you know, moments where, you know, there's some hanky-panky going on, but it's, you know, PG-13. Sinestra Day is definitely R, if not more. That traditional kind of along the lines of a Laurel K. Hamilton, very much, you know, there's blood, guts, and sex. And but the concept is, what if immortals worked for the Catholic Church? And they did the dirty work, and they protected the church's interests since the, you know, inception of the church. I mean, they predate the church.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how did the church rope them in and basically ensure their servitude? And how did they choose these people, or did, you know, is there a genetic component, or are they born to become immortal, or, you know, is there some sort of imbuing process? And it's a little different take on it. It started as a vampire novel, Feast of Epiphany.
Uh-huh.
It still has a lot of that, but they're very, very different. They're not your traditional vampire. They feed off of psychic energy or prana, life force. They can evolve. They have basically been lied to about what they are and what their purpose is. They believe their purpose is to maintain the balance of good and evil. So they will purposely hunt and judge very, very bad humans.
So how
and
did you come up with the idea for them to feed off kinetic energy?
I wanted something, like I said, I did want something different, but I thought, you know, and remember I had that nerdy husband that loves, you know, role play game. I actually used to play, I can't believe I'm admitting this, but I used to play Vampire the Masquerade way back when. And they had the ability to feed, they were still feeding off of blood, but they had the ability to do it via touch. And recently, Anne Rice has kind of had the same concept in some of her books. So instead of drawing blood from the human, I thought, well, if they're reading their memories, and they're looking at their experiences and judging their motives behind, you know, whatever atrocity the human had committed, it makes more sense that they would really be reading that energy, the vibration of the human.
Interesting. I love that look, that concept, that whole take on it.
Right. And then as they either, you know, evolve, which is a relatively new concept for them, I have a line, you know, everybody says you can't teach a dog new tricks, but nobody thinks about how the dog's going to feel when they do learn something, you know, like if you've been on the planet for 1,000 years and suddenly you realize, I can do what?
Right.
You know, how does that mess with your head?
Right.
Do you want that change, or do you want to stay where you are? But they can also devolve and kind of turn into more of a traditional type Nosferatu vampire where they don't look human anymore and they really are reliant on blood to sustain themselves. So the more they get away from their true nature, the darker they become.
Oh, okay. So now the couple that is in Feast of the Epiphany, is this the same couple that is in Feast of Mercy?
No. The way I structured the series is each book focuses on a different couple and their story, but the overarching plot line is the evolution of these immortals, their relationship with the Catholic Church, and how they eventually reconcile that relationship.
So
like, I know how the series
book
will end.
Be read as a standalone?
Yes. However, I think you would miss some of the nuance.
Sure.
As a matter of fact, I have a reviewer who agreed to review Mercy that had not, or Feast of Mercy that had not agreed or had not read Feast of Epiphany. She finished reading Feast of Mercy and said, "Give me the first book." You know, I feel like I missed some things. There's some references.
Right.
And I try, you know, you try to cover those, but without dumping, you know, 17 chapters of backstory, how do you make it a true standalone when you have, you know, threads running through?
Right. I have the same issue with my Flyboy trilogy. Yeah. You can read it, but you don't get the whole concept unless you start from the beginning. Well, now,
exactly.
In the Feast of the Epiphany, tell us about our couple, the hero and our heroine that are in that book.
It starts out as kind of a bizarre love triangle. The heroine is named Gia or Giovanna, and she has been her mate, so to speak, is Lachlan, and he's the leader of their clutch, which is a group of 9 immortals. A judge, an executioner, and 1 immortal to judge each of the 7 deadly sins. That's how they kind of group themselves. And she's been, since her becoming immortal, she's been with Lachlan. Lachlan is crazy. He's lost his marbles long ago and is very dark, and they're just starting to realize this. But as he loses his abilities, some of the compulsions that he put on Giovanna and her eventual love interest, Torben, are starting to fade. So for the first time in centuries, they're actually able to have free will that they haven't had before. And as, you know, Lachlan kind of fades out of the picture, I shouldn't say fades, he goes out kicking and screaming and shooting, the two, you know, the two love interests kind of come together and realize, wow, we've been really good friends all of these years, but there's more here.
Gotcha.
So, you know, Torben has loved her forever since, you know, she was still human, and she's kind of put it on the back burner because it would have meant the end to, you know, their relationship and their clutch. So lots of unrequited love going on.
Right. So you have the unrequited love in this book, but then in Feast of Mercy, you have an ancient feud with 2 lovers who are caught in the middle. What exactly are they caught in the middle of?
Okay. In the first, there's Nick and Marin is the couple in the second book, and their story actually starts in the first book where Marin is immortal, a baby immortal. She's only been with the clutch for 3 years. Nick starts out human in Epiphany, and in order to basically save his life, they turn him. So he's brand new immortal.
Okay.
And Nick and Marin had started a relationship. Things really got crazy in the story set in New Orleans. There's a whole bunch of bad stuff that happened. And they have an argument. Nick being Nick, he's rich, he's handsome, he's one of these cocky guys that, you know, everything is kind of laid at his feet. He never wanted to be immortal. He's like, yeah, that's, why would I do that? You know,
right.
I have everything I want now. hops out of the car after an argument, gets picked up by a car full of women going to New Orleans to have a good time, and one thing leads to another, and he ends up impregnating one of these women. So that's where we leave Nick and Maren in the first book. They are broken up. She's upset. He's upset, and lots of mistakes have been made. So in Mercy, it's really about them coming back together and realizing, wait a minute, if one thing, kind of the butterfly effect, if one thing would have been different, if I would have taken a step back, or you would have taken a step back, or, we could have fixed this, and realizing that there is actually love between the two of them, and how do they repair what happened and begin to move forward when, there's a pregnant human now that they have to deal with. And Nick is dealing with suddenly becoming a very, very little fish in a great big pond, and that's an experience he's never dealt with before.
Well, now, so, I noticed, you have that the high judge from the Vatican is arriving in New Orleans to investigate the strange events of Fat Tuesday. So did you have to make a trip to New Orleans during Fat Tuesday to do this research?
Oh, gosh, no. I go to New Orleans all the time.
I love New Orleans. That's why I had to ask.
Yeah, New Orleans is hands down, it's my favorite place in the world. We would live there if it wasn't for, originally it was the schools. Just weren't what we were looking for. Now I'm a homeschool mom, so I guess we could live there. But I think it's one of those things that we're going to end up after the kids are gone, and it's just the two of us, and we can, not have to worry about where do we walk the dogs and how do
you
we find social activities.
You can settle down and retire.
Exactly.
Well, how did you do research about the Vatican? How did you learn all about that?
Well, we are the characters haven't gone to the Vatican yet.
Okay.
Which is a good thing. They're going there in the next book, which I'm hoping to have out in February, March. And we're actually going to Rome, but it'll happen after the book's written. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But as far as research for the Vatican, there are walking tours, virtual tours that you can take, that you can walk through. I watched every movie, every documentary, checked out volumes of encyclopedia, the Vatican Encyclopedia with the maps and the, the names, and try to piece it together as much as possible. And then I realized this is a fantasy world. I mean, I did crazy things with the old Ursuline convent in New Orleans. I could do whatever I want,
Exactly. Yes, that's what's wonderful about fiction, yes.
Exactly. I added an entire, section to that convent that doesn't exist to make it work for what I needed it to do. And it's, it's not exactly the most exciting place in the world, and it's certainly exciting in the series. But, so these two are forced to go to the Vatican under the guise of learning and training to become members of the Sinestra Dei. And Sinestra Dei actually means the left hand of God. It's where the wrath and the vengeance comes in. The right hand is all the good stuff. The left hand is kind of all the bad stuff. And these immortals have really been the vengeance for the church. They've done some pretty horrific things.
Listeners want to follow you and check out the rest of your books, tell us about your social media sites, if you have a website where they can learn more about you and your books.
Okay, it's super simple. My Twitter handle, Facebook, and website are all Katherine M. Hurst, KATHRYN, M as in Mary, HEARST.
Very good. Great. Well, I have to tell our listeners, they've got to go over to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, wherever, and check out your covers. Your covers are absolutely phenomenal, and I hope that everyone will grab both of these series. I think they're fascinating, and I love your tagline for Feast of Mercy, where it says, loving someone means you want the best for them, but what happens when what's best isn't you? And, I mean, that is such the romance lover's key right there. So I encourage all of our listeners to grab both series. You've got one that's going to deal with the Christmas spirits, and here we are going into Christmas time, and then you have this fascinating one with New Orleans and vampires and just unrequited love, and I love all of that. So it has been a absolute pleasure to interview you, Catherine, and I wish you and your family the very best, and thank you again for your service. And listeners, go grab those books. Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you very much. You have a great day.
Thank you. You too.